Joining me on the line right now is John Cuvion. He's a Louisiana-based pollster and the founder of JMC Analytics and Polling. John, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on your show.
Anytime, every time. Hey, reading from your website, winwithjmc.com, in the aftermath of the Biden withdrawal, the Harris campaign benefited from a three-week honeymoon that involved both a smoothly executed rollout of her campaign and a leak-free vice presidential selection process. She has also received some incremental benefit from an error-free convention. While we don't have complete polling data until next week, a seven-day average of national polling data as of this morning shows that since last week, a 1.4% lead for the Harris-Walz ticket a week ago has now expanded to a 2.3% lead. John, I do want to get more to contemporary polling in this race, but I would love to start out today setting the record straight on polling accuracy in the 2016 and 2020 races. Conventional wisdom holds that the polls were way off in both of those cases, badly underestimating support for Donald Trump. To what degree is that true, sir?
I would disagree with the way and badly parts.
Okay.
One of the things you have to appreciate, and I actually, by the way, wrote postmortems about this in the aftermath of both the 2016 and the 2020 presidential elections. So I think the first thing that confuses people when you're talking about polling averages, you really have to look at it in two universes. One is the national poll. And of course, you and I know that national popular vote does not elect the president, but organizations do poll nationally. But the second way you have to look at it is the state-by-state polling. So with regards to 2016, it's almost like bringing back when I wrote this article, the national poll was actually on the mark. It showed Hillary Clinton up 2 points. And this, by the way, was polls taken a week before the election. So we're not talking about like an October 1st poll. Where the 2016 polls got it wrong was at the state-by-state level. In other words, they missed the ball in the blue wall states. Mm-hmm. They missed the mark in Florida. They missed the mark in Nevada. But I also think when you're talking about these misses, to me a polling miss is, let's say you said someone was going to win a state by, let's say, 5, and that person lost the state by 2. Well, that's a 7-point miss. That's clearly outside of the polling margin of error. I'm much harsher on that type of miss than, say, a swinging state like Florida, Nevada, where the polls may have shown a candidate up by 1 and that candidate lost by 0.4%. And by the way, that kind of closeness is what happened in these swingy states in 2016. It wasn't quite as bad at the state level in 2020, but there was a bigger problem there, and that was the polls had the Biden number right for some time. In other words, he stayed at about 50% for the last couple months of the presidential election cycle, and I was logging this data in every day. Where they missed the mark was the Trump vote at the national and state level. In other words, I was consistently seeing Trump in the low 40s, and of course, as you'll remember, he got closer to 47% of the vote, which that to me is a much bigger problem. And there's one poll in particular that is always used as the Exhibit A for just really bad polling. You'll remember a poll, I think it was ABC News Washington Post. It showed Trump down double digits in Wisconsin when the final result was far closer. That to me is a polling miss.
Yeah.
So like I said, I just wanted to kind of give you a little more detail in addition to the often believed, you know, the pollsters missed, let's not have polling anymore, blah, 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 mantra that I hear a lot.
Great. That's perfect. A good explanation. Thank you so much. So what are firms doing then to improve accuracy at the state-by-state level in 2024? What was it, the Wisconsin Project? I read something about that the other day. All these Democratic firms get together that traditionally don't work together, but now they realize that maybe for the sake of the industry, you know, they need to try to be more accurate in the public's view. What are people doing differently this time around to try to get a more accurate view?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not really convinced about the what they're doing differently, because, of course, that would involve getting into kind of like comparing notes and talking to pollsters and so forth, many of whom keep their data private.
Mm-hmm.
But I could tell you conceptually, I think there are two problems with regards to polling accuracy, especially when we're talking about Donald Trump. Number one is making sure you get an appropriate level of college-educated versus non-college educated respondents. Because one of the things I saw when I was polling, I was doing a national poll that was used in consideration of who should get allowed in the Milwaukee debate last year. And depending on what you wanted to have as the percentage of respondents who had a college degree, it made a big difference in terms of what the Trump percentage was. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, which I think goes under the radar, but I will happily force it above the radar. I have a different definition of likely voter than probably nearly every other pollster does.
Fascinating.
In other words, and I'd be happy to tell you, and this is a big philosophical thing where I don't mind being the lone person out there. I think far too many pollsters think of likely voters in terms of, well, let's just call a registered voter and ask them if they plan to vote. Let's be honest. How many people are going to admit to a pollster that they're not planning to vote? I can personally tell you that I have screened out maybe 3 to 5% of voters with that question. You know as well as I do, you do not have 95 to 97% turnout.
Right.
The metric I use instead, and this is where I don't mind being different, and it's gotten me through my career for the last 14 years, so I can't complain. I look at a person's voting history. So in other words, there's a lot of garbage in the voter rolls. If you have voted at least once, starting with the last presidential election, which right now the clock is November of 2020, I think of you as a legitimate voter. And then, of course, if you live in places like, say, St. Tammany Parish that are fast growing, you do have new voters who you have to account for. But if you last voted, let's say, in 2016, it's extremely unlikely you're going to show up in this presidential election. So weeding out the garbage, to me, is part of what must be done to determine who is a likely voter. And so that's the other half of the coin in terms of the what could or should or is being done to rectify for past polling misses. But I think also, too, it's important to educate your listeners that you're always going to have some polling error. And, of course, that's why we talk about the margin of error, where depending on what the sample size is, you're going to have some wiggle room. And so I think that's the other concept that's important is to understand. You're never going to have these polls that nail a race within one-tenth of a percentage point of the actual vote. Unless, of course, theoretically, you did a poll saying here in Louisiana at 7:59 p.m., you know, in that case, it would theoretically represent what voters are thinking as they go to on election day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
So lots of information to digest, but sometimes I think that a little bit of polling 101 needs to be disseminated just because there's so much misinformation out there.
Absolutely. That is a core part of what I wanted to do today, John. Like it with this audience and on this program, I often have to defend pollsters and polling against people who think that it's useless or it's skewed or it's biased or somebody's always got their thumb on the scale. So if you feel like leaning into just the basics of how this works, that's great with me. I did want to ask you.
I can't tell you one basic, which I think is important part of polling education. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always have people throw darts at pollsters, and I just kind of shrug it off. The most important concept to me is I'm interested in what polls with capital S say than a single poll. So in other words, polling averages like what you have on 538 or Real Clear Politics, that to me is a better number because you're looking at all these different pollsters who have their different philosophies mm-hmm. of how to poll.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Let's talk about young voters, people who are cell phone only households. I'm of the sort of younger generation. I think most people mm-hmm. my age and my peers would rather pick up an unpinned grenade than answer a phone call from a number we don't recognize. How do you poll those voters?
Ah, an excellent question to which I will give you a coherent and unequivocal answer. There is a cultural shift I have seen, which is probably about a cutoff of about 40 years of age. People above that will pick up the phone and talk to a live operator. If you're under 40, good luck. And that's where you have alternate means of polling that have to come in, which would be like internet surveys. My personal preference is texting cell phone users. And because when you text it to somebody, text a poll to somebody, it enables to take the poll at his or her leisure, and texted polls go much quicker. So I've found that's how you get an appropriate representation of younger voters. And by the way, the other part of the equation, which you implied by using the term cell phone voters, I pretty much use a 70% cell phone sample nowadays. I certainly would not, you know, have anything less than that, because virtually everybody does have a cell phone, even though you have some holdouts who still have landlines.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So Harris's lead over Trump is increasing, but it's still relatively narrow. We see what we call low elasticity in the electorate, meaning there just aren't very many people who haven't decided who to vote for and are still persuadable. Do you see Kamala Harris having any ability to further increase her lead, or, on the other hand, for Trump to get back in front?
Perhaps in the next week, yes, and I'll tell you why. One of the things you have to appreciate with polling is there's a time element to it. In other words, the amount of time it takes to field a survey, the amount of time it takes the data to come back, the amount of time for an analyst to make some sense out of the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, this is not a 10-minute exercise. So to give you a real-world application of what I just mentioned, even though polls that I've been including in this average that show the 2.3%, I would say the cutoff is probably like early to mid this week, which meant the start of the Democratic convention. Mm-hmm. To accurately convey what people think after Kamala Harris's acceptance speech, you're going to have pollsters out in the field today, tomorrow, Sunday. That probably means Monday, Tuesday, I'm going to start to see polling data. So in other words, you don't have that instant, you know, feedback. It does take time to do a quality poll to make sure the sample is representative of the population. And where I'm going with this, in a very long answer to your original question, is I do think there's probably going to be about another half point to a point improvement in Kamala Harris's average, which perhaps might be knocked down a little bit by this late-breaking development of RFK Jr. dropping out and likely endorsing Donald Trump.
Yeah. Okay. So with Harris still, you think she's at 2.3 today. She may extend to like 2.8 if you're not factoring in RFK.
2.5 to 3, yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So what do those numbers right now suggest about her chances in those swingy states, which, of course, we're getting very familiar with? That's Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, mm-hmm. Nevada, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and the Keystone State, Pennsylvania. How big of a national lead does one have to have in order to start pulling those swing states out of reach for your opponent?
I'm of the opinion that if you're a Democrat, that you really need to get your national popular vote lead above 3%. One of the most unspoken aspects of the 2020 presidential election, Joe Biden actually won by 4.5 percentage points. Included in that victory were some very, very narrow leads, and I'm talking about less than 1 percentage point, in places like Arizona and Georgia. Now, I'm of the opinion those are pretty much going to flip to Donald Trump, which puts him up to 262 electoral votes. I don't think North Carolina is going to flip either. It's going to stay with Trump. So then that brings us to, okay, could another state flip to Trump and put him at 270? The thing about that is the closer that Harris is to a 0% lead, the more likely I would expect that, say, like a Pennsylvania or a Michigan would flip, because you can't have something happen nationally that is not also reflected in swing state polling. Mm-hmm. In other words, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin are part of our great country, so any movement towards the blue or red in those states is to some extent going to be occurring in those states as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Early voting is right around the corner. Many states are going to start in-person early voting in next month, in September. How does the rise in early voting affect the timing and strategy of polling firms?
Another one of my favorite topics, which I evangelize about. So, to be blunt about it, the old model of planning your campaign around Election Day, to me, should be discarded. Mm-hmm. Because what happened in 2020, nearly 70% of the vote was cast before Election Day. What that means in plain terms, and by the way, in Louisiana, we're going to be starting on October 18th. mail-in ballots will probably hit like the third or fourth week of September. What that means in plain terms is if you're trying to put your best messaging of for your candidate a week before November 5th, you're wasting your time. You really need to do that messaging, I would say, mid to late September, as people are starting to formulate their opinions and as mail ballots are going out and before in-person early voting starts, because 46% of Louisianians voted early in 2020. Now, some of that's pandemic-related, wow. But a little trivia for you, which you could appreciate being in New Orleans, I'm of the opinion, what was that hurricane? It was Hurricane Delta, I think, the one that went up New Orleans and Jefferson the last week of October in 2020.
Oh, Zeta, maybe?
Yeah. Zeta, that's
yep.
it.
Yep.
I am convinced that had that hurricane not gone up to those parishes when they did, we would have cracked a million early votes. Because, as you can appreciate, when you have a hurricane going on, you're not exactly going to have early voting offices open. Mm-hmm. Kind of a safety issue, to be polite.
Right.
But more to the point, though, the important thing is you really have to think of Election Day in terms of influencing the maximum number of people is really right about now to right about mid-October, as opposed to thinking you could do some magic communication, say, on November 4th.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Particularly
great.
Since North Carolina starts early voting September 6th and on September 20th, three states, Minnesota and Virginia being two of those three, start in-person early voting on September 20th.
Wow. September 10th is the first debate. How do you think polling might shift based on the debate performance? If either Vice President Harris or President Trump kind of steps on the rake as badly as Joe Biden did back in June, would you expect a similar effect on that candidate's polling?
I do. Now, I'm not expecting like a 5 to 10 point movement, but I could see a couple points, because the thing you have to appreciate is thus far, Kamala Harris has had the great advantage of introducing herself and opponents' missteps without her being really challenged. But you put her up against Donald Trump on September 10th, there is the risk that she may not come off well, or she may come off really well. But I think September 10th is really a critical inflection point in terms of could she pick up a couple points, or could Donald Trump pick up a couple points? Because you really haven't put the two of them together quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait for that. That's going to be really interesting. Okay, last one, John. What advice would you give to our audience broadly, and we're back to polling 101 here, about how they should interpret polling data in the next 74 days? What should we be wary about? What are the pitfalls, obstacles, opportunities for greater understanding? Help us out here, man.
When a person on social media gets all excited about a single poll and how it's a game changer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I tend to question that person's motives, as opposed to if you were to say, well, according to such and such average, it shows that the presidential race has moved this many number of points in these swing states and nationally. As you appreciate, the example I just gave has a lot more detail than just some partisan trying to spin a narrative. So, like I said, the polls with capital S is far more important than a single poll. And that's the advice I would give to those trying to follow this race. I would also say, if you have the time, try to get diametrically opposed viewpoints, which is spend a little time on MSNBC and Fox, and you always figure the truth is somewhere in between the two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. And also, I think just in my own observation, people pay no attention at all to the polling firm and who paid for it. And I wonder if you could impart a little bit of advice to us about how to determine that. If I see something that says Kamala Harris is up by 30 points in Pennsylvania, and I go and see that the polling firm that conducted that is, you know, Democrats Are Great LLC, I mean, that's kind of a red flag, right?
Right. Yes. And that's that fine print you'll typically see if you have a news organization that's talking about a poll. They will put the fine print in the bottom, you know, such and such did the poll. It was conducted over these dates, such and such margin of error. Ooh, that's another red flag, too. I've been hearing stories in social media about polls being released that were conducted 2 weeks ago. If you are a pollster, I'm automatically suspicious of somebody who sits on a poll for 2 weeks, because the world, I mean, think of how much the world has changed since late June.
Truly.
So if if, to use an extreme example, you had a poll that you had released in late June that showed, I don't know, Trump up 10 points in Massachusetts, well, besides that number being absurd on its surface, the fact that it's in late June was when the polling was done, that's another red flag, because the world is rapidly changing and you cannot rely on stale information.
Wow. John Cuvion, you've just given us a masterclass in understanding polling data and all the different angles therein. How can people follow your work once this conversation's over?
Absolutely. So what I like to do on my blog site, winwithjmc.com, I've been posting articles every Friday about what I see about the presidential race. The other way is for those who like Twitter, or X as it's known currently, my handle is at winwithjmc.com. And I like to talk about things. I guess my specialty is debunking the conventional wisdom, like a few minutes ago when I talked about how I think this is going to be a low-interest election, and here are the data points I think that point to that. That's the kind of stuff I like to do, because oftentimes I find that political data gets kind of drowned in groupthink, and no one really critically looks at it like I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, that's winwithjmc.com, and also winwithjmc on Twitter. It is known as Twitter and will always be known as Twitter on this program. Yeah. John, thank you for your time, your work, and your way. Have a great weekend. Stay cool.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right. My guest is John Cuvion from JMC Analytics and Polling. After we come back here, we're going to speak to Charles in Ponchatoula and Tracy out in New Orleans East. We'll be right back after this. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoop. Stick around.